When they confirmed Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, Senate Republicans under Mitch McConnell completed a precedent the Democrats started under Harry Reid. But don't think this means the Senate has become a 100-member version of the House. For a closer look, we turn to Roll Call senior editor David Hawkins. And David, you're writing that this so-called nuclear option is not as widespread or as destructive or has as much fallout as people might have thought.
Well, that's right, assuming that Mitch McConnell makes good on his promise, which he made last week right before the Gorsuch votes, and that his successors keep up the promise. And that promise is to never touch the legislative filibuster. What you said at the top is true, which is that an important crack in the precedent allowing limitless debate or indefinite delay unless a supermajority of senators agree. That precedent was what the big crack in that precedent came 4 years ago when Harry Reid was in charge, took it away for all nominees, executive branch and judicial branch, with the exception of justices to the Supreme Court. So what happened yesterday, So what happened last week was only to extend that nomination precedent to the Supreme Court. But, obviously Supreme Court nominations, while extremely important, it's the most important lifetime appointment that there is in the federal government by far, they only come along once or twice a decade. But legislation comes along every day. And McConnell has said that it's the legislative filibuster that is what makes the Senate the Senate. It's been around and in use much longer than the filibustering of people, and he's on some solid ground when he says that, looking at the record, and that he says that so long as he's the majority leader, the legislative filibuster isn't going to be touched. Now, many of his own colleagues, while they agree with that sentiment, they say they feel themselves already slipping down a slippery slope, and they wonder whether McConnell can live up to that.
In my lead, I mentioned that the Senate would not become a 100-member version of the House. Aside from the filibuster, there are also other traditions, right, that separate the two chambers.
Well, that's true. I mean, the first difference is that a senator gets elected for 6 years, that he or she gets elected statewide, that he or she does have some responsibilities that House members don't have, that mostly do have to do with nominations and then also treaties, right? So the only nomination a president ever makes, and it's only happened twice in our history, is that if there's a vacancy in the vice presidency, then the House and the Senate have to approve that person. Otherwise, every other nominee is only the Senate's responsibility to give advice and consent. Treaties the same way. So yes, there will still be some differences, but you hear exactly the phrase that you used in your introduction, senator saying, "I don't want to be, a House member elected for 6 years. I want whether I'm in the majority or the minority." I will still want I know that if I'm in the majority now, I may be in the minority someday. And when that unfortunate political consequence befalls me, say these senators, I want to be able to use my filibuster power to try and slow down and alter legislation. And that, of course, that's another point that McConnell makes, which I think is a valid point. He says, with a person, indefinite delay is rarely going to change. It's never going to change their resume. It might allow for new information to come up about their background, but generally, delay doesn't change the outcome of a nominee. Either a senator has made up his or her mind that they like the nominee or they don't like the nominee. Whereas with legislation, these delaying tactics kind of compel you to rethink your position. They compel you to go back to the drawing board, to make amendments, to send the bill back to committee, to tinker. In theory, that's what the Senate is designed to do, is to be deliberative and slow down and reconsider legislation until a consensus forms.
We're speaking with David Hawkins, senior editor of Roll Call. And now, of course, they're on recess for a couple of weeks. And what can we expect to happen in the meantime? What could affect when they come back? Because we did have this missile strike, which kind of changed the political and the geopolitical scene to some degree. And there's still no budget and still no health care legislation.
That's right. I would say that the thing that most of Washington will be paying attention to when Congress comes back on April 24th is the fact that the authorization to spend money runs out at midnight on April 28th. While members of Congress themselves are gone for these 2 weeks, anybody who has anything to do with the Appropriations Committee, whether they're on the staff or even the members of the Appropriations Committee, the staff is working very, very hard And members of the Appropriations Committee, even back in their districts and states, are on the phone a lot trying to see how much of a comprehensive, although only several months long, appropriations bill might be put together over the break. I'd say there's still a chance that what Congress comes up with by the end of April looks more like a comprehensive package of decisions than just a simple stopgap bill. But I think the other alternative is a stopgap bill. Neither side, nobody is talking anymore about a shutdown. I think we can put our countdown, shutdown, showdown, countdown clocks back on a high shelf, at least until the fall, because, of course, it's an all-Republican government. So in every past shutdown that there has been, it's been divided government, where there could be a partisan blame gaming that goes on. But in this case, it's an all-Republican show. The Republicans do not want to risk being blamed for a shutdown. It should be noted that April 28th, the day the budget, the appropriations bills lapse, the current CR lapses, is also effectively President Trump's 100th day in office. He does not want to sully that anniversary with a shutdown.
So they'll be back before that date, correct?
They'll be back just 4 days before, right? That date, it's the end of that, it's the last weekday in April. They come back that Monday. The notion is that the staff and the members working the phones will see how far they can get during the break while they're back in their districts. And then at the start of that last week in April, when they do come back, there will be a go, no-go decision as to what kind of a bill they will be able to pass by the end of that week to get them to prevent a shutdown and presumably get them to the end of the year, to the end of September. There is a chance that if they think they really might be able to write sort of a decent comprehensive budget bill, they might give themselves a one-week extension, pass another continuing resolution or CR that will just last a few days or a week to buy themselves some more time. But no matter which way they do it, shutdown's off the table.
David Hawkins is senior editor of Roll Call. As always, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll have a link to his column and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.